Good morning, welcome to this episode of Under the Helmet. We spoke to Devin Bush and Chad Simmons last week about the Alabama Wolfpack. They re-enter the APDFL with, I'm guessing, a pretty strong talent base and a pretty strong direction. To further move the discussion along, we are talking to defensive coordinator Darrell Whitehead. Coach Whitehead, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well, Terry. How are you doing today?
I am well. It is about 3 degrees up here. It's a little chilly, but we're hanging in there.
I hear you, man. I've had my share of that northern stuff, so yeah. I know how you feel. I feel your pain.
It's tough. It's so tough. Now, Coach, what drew you to the Wolfpack as far as what about their overarching direction leads you to want to coach with them?
Well, I kind of cut my teeth in the APDFL 2 years ago in P-Town, and that was the amateur to professionals route was totally new to me, having coached high school ball most of my career. The level of talent, and to my surprise, learning that young adult males have just as much thirst for learning this game and being coached hard as high school kids do. And the same applies as, you know, they don't know how much, they don't care how much you know about football until they know how much you care about them. And I try to exemplify that every time I'm around them. We also have a chat group on Facebook. I'm continuously reaching out to them on Facebook, not just with football stuff, but just with life lessons as well. So, and just the, I know some of the coaches that are there. I've coached with them before, and I just think it's a good solid group to be around. And what I've learned over the course of the last few months is, there's some really good talent to be groomed there, and I'm really looking forward to working with these kids. Well, these guys, they're kids to me because I'm almost 60. So,
now, you said that you started with coaching high school. What was your first high school coaching job, and what do you take most from that first time on the sidelines?
My first job was I was a ninth grade offensive coordinator and varsity receivers coach at Southern Lehigh High School in Coopersburg, Pennsylvania, which is just outside of Allentown. And it was that was actually where I began to just realize that kids don't care. Once again, they don't care how much you know till they know how much you care. You know, that was a pretty upscale area, but, you know, upscale areas have their own sets of problems as well. And when you reach out to those kids and you know that they know that you have their best interests at heart, they work a lot harder for you on the field. The learning was just invaluable. But if I may add, I really began to grow and really learn this game coaching at Moss Point High School in Moss Point, Mississippi. It was I don't know if you're familiar with that program down on the coast of Mississippi or not, but a very, very rich tradition and just talent coming from everywhere. But it wasn't just the talent from the kids. I was around the coaching staff that had been together in excess of 20 years. So I was able to learn a lot about the game. I learned a lot about secondary play from Coach Luther Kirkendall while I was there. He was the one that kind of embedded in my head that, well, you can't just know what's happening in the secondary. You've got to know what's happening on all three levels. And throughout the course of my career, I have coached on all three levels in defense. I've coached defensive line, linebackers, and secondary. So it makes it so much easier coaching the secondary and getting the point across to your secondary as far as the passing game is concerned, when they know what the linebackers are responsible for, as well as when you're coaching, working with the defensive line and the linebackers, if the linebackers know what's going on in front of them as well as the defensive line knows what's going on behind them, it just makes it so much easier to you know, on them to learn schemes that you're trying to learn.
Now, what do you think the heart and soul of a defense is as far as your personal coaching philosophy?
It all starts up front. If you're and that's with the D-line, nothing else is successful if you can't stop the run starting with the D-line, keeping the offensive line off your linebackers. When you send them on some type of stunt, making that stunt get to the point of attack to stop inside runs, outside runs, what have you. But it all starts up front, and as well as in the passing game. If you can't get a pass rush, I mean, they can't cover them all day. They can't sit in zones all day. They can't cover them man-to-man all day. So you got to get some pressure from up front.
And with that,
so to answer your question, I would say the defensive line is the heart and soul of any defense.
And with that ability to generate a semblance of a rush, you have various types of rush, and you have your standard 4-3, you have your 5-tech and a 3-4. What do you prefer?
I've actually worked with all fronts, but my preference has always been the 4-man front out of the 4-3. I'm not going to sit here basically and give you out my whole scheme or anything, but you know, they sometimes on long yardage situations or 2-minute type, you know, I may or may not switch to a 3-man front with speed rush guys and good guys on the second and third level as well.
There's always a saying, I've kind of sort of been known for my one irritant as far as football is rushing 3. For the life of me, I know that there are schemes that in situations that folks will, but rushing 3, it sits wrong for all the reasons of you'll have 7 behind you if you rush 4. To me, rushing 3 is just, yes, you have 8 in coverage, but you're giving that quarterback a lot of time, and you're showing your defense or your back 8 a lot of trust that somebody won't find a hole or a seam or daylight. Do you believe, on a mental level, some defensive coordinators try to get too cute?
I do, not so much in the NFL level, because those guys are so progressed with their technique. While we're on the subject of three-man fronts, they're so well versed in their, you know, with the use of their hands and the use of power moves and speed moves. I do think sometimes at this level, where you don't have a lot of time to practice, and you don't necessarily spend the time with the guys that colleges and high schools and NFL programs spend with their guys, you can get too cute sometimes, and sometimes you can get too cute and it can turn around and bite you in the rear end. Ask me how I know. That's happened to me before. You know, we all try to look at things and say that we want to try this, we want to try that, and I don't necessarily want to use the term, not necessarily dumb down, because I never did like that term, but you have to be, you can be somewhat creative in this league, but you also at the same time, you have to be a little bit basic, like I said, because you're not spending the time with these guys, to really, put in a very complicated, and complex scheme. Because they got families, they got jobs, they've got other things that they've got going on. So it's really hard at this level.
Now, for me, when I watch quality semi-pro or developmental football, defenses stand out, especially in this league, because you have a plethora of pass rushers. You have monstrous interior defensive linemen. Not going into your personal philosophy as far as what you do this year, traditionally, just speaking as a viewer there, as a viewer, not a coach, as a viewer, do you prefer fast-flowing defenses, or do you prefer big up front, punch in the mouth, see what happens in the secondary defenses, to watch, not to coach, just to watch?
Well, I kind of cut my teeth on the not necessarily read and attack, but or read and react, but attack and react. So I would have to go fast flow, but with fast flow, you have to be very, very disciplined to play a fast flow defense, especially on the backside, and especially in this league, because a lot of running backs that I've noticed from my time in P-Town and just from watching film of various teams in the APDFL leading into this season, if they head left and they can't see a gap, they're going to turn around and go back the other way. So you really have to be disciplined. Make sure you're disciplined on the backside, your backside end, your backside backers, your backside safeties. They really have to be slow to go with the flow on the backside to make sure they're playing cutback, whatnot. So, to answer your question, I like the fast flow type defenses. I think a lot of times when you, especially once again going back to this level, and especially at the high school level, when you tell them to read or slow read, a linebacker could very easily slow read at 5 yards off the ball, which is where his alignment is, and that's no good, especially if the guard rips through the three technique and goes to the second level to get your linebacker at 5 yards depth, then your history as a linebacker in the run game. So I like for them to identify flow and let's start getting there and filling gaps.
Now, stylistically, just the modern player, you've seen players, like you said, at all different levels, and you've seen the influx of talent but may not direction. How much do you believe your role as a defensive coordinator is teacher, tutor, drill sergeant?
You got to have a good mix of all three of those. Yeah, it's funny you say drill sergeant, because I am retired military, The biggest thing I think, and this is where I think a lot of coaches lose sight of the fact that a coach in essence is a teacher, and you really have to teach your scheme, you have to teach the other team's scheme, you have to teach their game so that you can play your game that you've been taught. You have to teach the defensive backs, you got to teach them techniques to stay over the top. Linebackers, you got to teach them techniques to redirect, or you got to teach them techniques that if they get a down block in front of them, that's an open window situation. You got to go fill that. It's more of a teacher. Now, do I feel like the defense feeds off of your energy as a defensive coordinator, which in my opinion falls more into the drill sergeant role at times? Yes, I do. Because I feel like a defense is a, or any a football team period is a mirror image of the personality of their coach.
Now, there's been talk, there's been conjecture, there's been discussion about the modern player being one of different because of a certain level of sensitivity. Have you seen that in your career as in high school or even in semi-pro, anywhere, that the modern player is a little more touchy than previous generations' athletes?
Yes, sir, I have, especially at the high school level. And, you know, it's just we had pretty thick skin. I played in the late 70s, early 80s. You know, we had pretty thick skin back then, and you had to have thick skin back then. But at the same time, there are some kids that do have that thick skin. It's really difficult, even from starting my coaching career in 1989 up to today. I mean, there's things that I did in 1989 at any level, there's things that I did in 1989 that I wouldn't think about doing in 2021, just because of the nature of the way kids and athletes have changed. I've actually mellowed out a lot over the years. You know, as recent as 15 years ago, you know, I was kind of full of PNV and you know, just kind of really hardcore whatnot. But I still taught. I still made sure the kids understood. But kind of mellowed out a little bit over the years. But I always keep my PNV card in my back pocket to pull when I feel I need to pull.
That's fair.
And I've learned that even with young adults that are wanting to be coached, that's okay. But you got to keep it. You know, you have to respect them too. You know, and as long as they know that it's not, they understand that it's not personal. That we're all trying to reach the same goal. I think it's okay.
Now, you said that you coached in Pennsylvania, and now you coach, obviously, in Alabama. When you look at the overall, and when you look at just everything, you are an Alabama native, correct?
Correct. I grew up in Birmingham, went to Banks High School. David Cutcliffe was actually my head coach in high school.
That leads to the Tennessee fandom, which we'll get into the Tennessee fandom because I have questions because that's the one school I never thought they would be this bad for this long. But
yeah,
when it comes to Alabama and semi-pro, do you believe there are too many teams in semi-pro in Alabama?
No, I don't believe that. And the reason I did it first, I thought about it, but you know, like I said, based on the logistics of this league, you've got guys all over the place that want to play and they don't have the luxury because of jobs or whatnot, family situations where they can travel extremely far to play this game if there's not a team available for them. Case in point, you know, it was a 125 mile round trip for me to drive to Parrish when I coached at T-Town. So it was rough. I don't think there's too many teams in the state. You know, all the rosters are full. I mean, it would be nice if it could probably be broken down to three, maybe four teams. It would be nice if we could break it down to that level. But I just don't think, like I said, with the other things that these players and coaches have to deal with as far as travel, I just don't think it. I think it's fine the way it is.
Now, when the Wolfpack start their season, and Do you still get that same type of buzz or that same type of energy first game of the season that you have? Like, you've been doing this a very long time. Do you still get that same type of, not so much butterflies, but nervous electricity?
Yeah, I do. If you don't get that type of energy before a game, or even I get it before practice. So if you don't get it before you take the field in any, at any time, then you're in the wrong business and you're in this for the wrong reason. I'm that guy that on Saturdays, if my kickoff is at 7, I'm probably up about 4:30 or 5 o'clock, and I'm chomping at the bits, ready to go. If there's a very long travel, I'm that guy that travels down the night before to get myself mentally prepared to play. So that I don't have to deal with the stresses of driving down there and getting out of my car and going out on the field. Because I place a strong emphasis, and I relay that to my players as well. But I place a very, very strong emphasis on mental preparation, and I like to make sure that I'm very mentally prepared whenever I'm going to practice, whenever I'm going to play a game.
Now, we had hit on David Cutcliffe and the University of Tennessee. I'm guessing you are a longtime fan. Now, a little a preface. I remember watching Johnny Majors as the head coach. I've been to Knoxville. I've been to Neyland mm-hmm. Stadium. I've been to mm-hmm. festivities before and after Neyland Stadium. But I can't now because I'm a little older and, yeah, a little wiser. But how would you, as a Tennessee fan, fix them?
That's a good question. And you know what? Coach Heupel has got a big job in front of him. It's been at the point for a while where just the whole thing just kind of needs to be blown up and put back together. Of course, the downfall with blowing something up and rebuilding it is, you know, you're going to have some tough years. Very disappointed in the way the events of the, you know, with the recruiting the recruiting violations, it's just not a good vibe with that going on. So I'm very disappointed in the way that went down, especially because I know personally the previous head coach, because I've coached against him when he was a high school coach here in Hoover, and have kind of followed him through his stops before he was the head coach at Tennessee. And I don't think there was anybody in Vol Nation that was more excited about Coach Pruitt coming to Knoxville than I was, because I said, okay, now it's going to get fixed. And you know, I came out of last season, the 2019 season, feeling really good as they went into recruiting. But I'm going to be honest with you. You know, there was a lot of false sense of security when they came out the gate 2-0 at the beginning of this year. But, you know, I kind of saw some things in watching, because I haven't watched a football game as just a regular fan in a long time. I'm always looking at scheme. I'm looking at how their technique is. I'm looking at, you know, I'm looking at what the other offenses are doing and how we're adjusting to it. And, you know, I saw a lot of things early on in the season, even in two games that they won at the beginning of the year, that kind of raised some questions in my mind. Thought they had some stuff fixed when they went to Athens, and you know, they had the big stop right there before the half, and the wheels began to fall off, in my opinion, for the rest of the season, play 3 of the second half of that game. So it's just going Terry. It's just going to have to be. It's going to have to be blown up. He's got a lot of. Even with the guys that have hit the transfer portal, I think he's still got some decent talent there that he can work with. You know, it only remains to be seen what type of kids he's going to bring in to continue to build his brand in Knoxville. But I mean, hey, I've been a fan of that. I've been a fan of that program since 1972, and the reason I'm a fan of that program is because the first quarterback I saw on TV that looked like me was Kondrick Holloway. So that's that kind of goes to my. That kind of is the reason I'm a Tennessee fan. So I don't know. It's just at this point it's just got to be blown up and put back together and kind of let the chips fall where they may. I'm very interested to see what type of defensive staff he surrounds himself with, because I think the defense is the heart of a football team. And I mean I've coached on the offensive side of the ball, but you know, I'm just going to be honest with you, Terry. A 52-49 football game does absolutely nothing for me. If I'm the defensive coordinator and the final score is 52-49, then I've got some things that I've got to go back to the lab and fix.
And that's fair. When I look at Tennessee, I look at history. I'm 46, be 47 in June. I remember watching Johnny Majors on those Saturday football games when I was in high school. They had a quarterback named Andy Kelly. They had two running backs. Was it
Chuck Webb and Reggie Cobb?
Yep, Cobb Webb. That's what they called him. And yeah. they had a defensive end. I think number 91. That last name was Moody. And this is long before Peyton Manning, before Carl Pickens, but it was different. Tennessee was competitive. And when Majors retired and Phil Foreman stepped in, they won a national championship with T. Martin, which made me happy. But after T. Martin left, it just disintegrated. Things just fell apart.
And it was a very, very gradual – it was a very, very gradual fall-off where only people that – you know, only people that really understand how to – look at and evaluate. The average fan does not see that drop off, but I actually began to see it probably 2001.
It just, you know, the names may not ring loud for NFL fans, but guys like Joey Kent, he was a player. Terry Fair was a player. These people.
Joey's a personal friend of mine too. Joey's father and my father actually started, well, they played against each other in college. Joey's father was a quarterback at Alabama A&M, and my father played defensive end at Knoxville College. And they actually, our fathers actually started their coaching careers together at Ullman High School here in Birmingham. So
it's one of those things that when I look at Tennessee, it's hard to watch because people are regarding Tennessee like they're regarding Vanderbilt. That's weird to me. Everyone knew that Vandy would be bad forever because they're the rich, smart kids who really can't play. And I shouldn't say they're the stereotypical or traditionally rich or smart kids who they have athletes, but they're not going to walk into Tuscaloosa and beat anyone. They're not going to walk into Athens and beat anyone. They're not going to walk into Gainesville and beat anyone. But Tennessee could do all those things. And it's weird to see at one time watching the 90s, seeing the upswing in Tennessee and then the downswing when Tennessee started to decline. I was in Knoxville in 2003. They were playing the Georgia Bulldogs. David Green and Verron Hayes, they beat the Vols sideways because it was a rainy Saturday night in October. I remember it like yesterday. From that point on, it seems like their stock plummeted and Alabama stock rose. It coincided perfectly with almost like Alabama was starting to build. When Saban comes, Tennessee falls flat. Alabama's way up in the stratosphere.
Exactly.
Now, last question. We always start with food. And I have two questions. We start with food. Now, I've asked every coach and player in APDFL because this is a important food question that you have a table in front of you. There are two desserts. You can eat one of these desserts every day for the rest of your life. Peach cobbler, pecan pie. Which and why?
Peach cobbler.
See? Good
peach
answer.
Cobbler. I'm not a fan of, I'm not a real big fan of, I enjoy cooking. I actually cook for stress management. But I've never been to me, and it, you know, we can argue this all the way. No disrespect to anybody that enjoys it, because I know a lot of people that enjoy pecan pies and chocolate cakes with the pecans, you know, placed on the chocolate icing at Christmas time. But I've just never been a fan with nuts in desserts. I've just never been a fan of it. Don't know why, just never been a fan of it. But, yeah, peach cobbler all day, man.
Now, also, like, the one difference, you said that coaching in Pennsylvania, and definitely being from Alabama and being a military person, what was the best meal you had outside the state of Alabama?
That's a tough one, man, because I eat. I would have to say I had some, I've just got to go with my military. I'm going to go to Naples, Italy with this one. I had some steamed calamari that was served on top of, I can't remember what it was like greens, and they looked like turnip greens, and they tasted like turnip greens, but they weren't turnip greens. They were very, very deep green. They were steamed really, really good, and it just had a really good taste. But that was probably the best thing that I ate outside of Alabama was steamed calamari, and it had the tentacles and everything, and those greens, and it was mixed together like a casserole, but it was really good.
That's interesting.
I want to fly over there and get some now that you mention it.
Coach Whitehead, I want to thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Under the Helmet. We learned a lot. We learned so much. Thank you so much. Good luck to the Wolfpack. We definitely will circle back and talk to you again.
Yes, sir. And I just want to add this, too. We are, as a team and as an organization, we're really – really excited about this jump. I've always been impressed with the competition within the APBFL. I think there's really some top quality talent around the league. Some really good ball players that really get your attention, and just from watching film of a lot of our upcoming opponents, a lot of guys that are going to keep me up a lot of late nights after I get home from work just to figure out how to stop them. So I'm looking forward to the challenge.
Once again, Coach Whitehead, good luck to the Wolfpack. We definitely will be talking to you and definitely will be watching games.
Yes, sir. Thank you. You all have a good day.
Thank you. This has been another episode of the Under the Helmet podcast. Be good to yourselves. Be good to each other. Do not eat pecan pie.